The Warrior Soul Podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppinfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. You know, one of the things I say over and over again, and I say it at the beginning of every episode, you heard it in the introduction, is that we don't have a long time to be on this planet, right? We don't have a long time. This thing we call life, even though it might seem like it drags on at times, and even though it might seem like it's going on forever, we don't get to be here forever. We don't get to be here forever, right? I'm going to say that over and over again because you need to remember that. Everything in your life right now is temporary. You are temporary. And so the thing is, as we travel through life, what we really need to do is we need to allow ourselves to experience as much as possible, to be present, and to really take advantage of everything that we can while we still can. My guest today is a man named Josh Guerrero. He served as a United States Marine, and then he went on to serve as a Peace Corps volunteer. Now, you might not know much about the Peace Corps, but essentially what happens is it's a government agency that sends citizens abroad to take up residence in a remote area, and then they will either teach or they will provide medical assistance or they will provide assistance with businesses and commerce in those areas. And a lot of times these volunteers are going off for periods of 1 or 2 years and they're living without running water. They're living without any of the modern conveniences that we all take for granted here. You know, and one of the things about us here in the United States, this is the greatest country in the world. We have so much opportunity. We also have a lot of choice. You know, when you go to the grocery store, for example, you know, think about it like this. If you're thirsty right now, you could probably walk down the convenience store. You can get yourself a Gatorade. You could get yourself one of, you know, maybe 10 different types of water that they sell. Or you could just go to your sink and you could fill up a glass of water. In a place like Ghana, where Josh was stationed, they've got to go out and they got to collect water every day. They got to walk miles to bring it back. And clean water is a luxury. And you think about little things like bathing, not being able to bathe every day, not being able to take a hot shower. And a lot of us would, you know, we'd crumble in that type of environment. But Josh went, he lived it, and he got the bug. He got the adventure bug. So Josh has since been around the world several times. He works as an archaeologist, which is also really interesting. He went from being a Marine to a Peace Corps volunteer to becoming an archaeologist. And we talk a bit about that. He's also involved with a nonprofit that helps to get veterans involved in archaeology, which I think is awesome as well. He's planning a huge trek right now. He's going to be going from the interior of South America out to the coastline. By now, he will have announced it. And he's just a great dude. I had the chance to be on his podcast, the All Around Adventure podcast, a few months ago. Had a great time. And we had a great conversation here. So you guys are going to get a lot out of this episode. You're going to learn about some career paths that you might not have otherwise come across, things like the Peace Corps or becoming an archaeologist. You're going to also learn a bit about the world today. So like I said, I hope you get a lot out of it. The only thing I have to ask of you guys today is this. I need you to do three things. Number one, subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do. Number two, I need you to write a review on iTunes. I can't tell you how much this helps to spread word about the show. My mission in life is to empower U.S. military veterans to live their best lives. That means the more veterans who listen to this show, the more I'm helping them. The more I'm helping them to live their best lives, to move on to the next stage of their life, to take advantage of everything that this life has to offer. And finally, I need you to share these episodes out. Share this episode out with somebody who could use the information that they're about to get, or any one of our episodes. My goal is to get the Warrior Soul podcast in the top 25 of all podcasts by the end of the year 2020. It's a huge goal. I started out from scratch, nobody knowing. I wasn't famous, nothing like that. And I've been slowly building this up with your help. And honestly, it is the greatest honor of my life to be serving this community in this capacity through this show. So if you guys can help me with that, I don't care if you ever spend a dime with Warrior Soul. If you just share our stuff and you write us a review, I will be a happy man. So with that, guys, let's get into this conversation with Mr. Josh Guerrero, the host of the All Around Adventure podcast, Marine, Peace Corps volunteer, and archaeologist, a regular freaking Indiana Jones up in here, right? So let's get into it. Josh Guerrero, welcome to the Warrior Soul podcast, man.
Hey, brother. It's really great to be here. I'm honored that you invited me and looking forward to this because I just get to show up and talk because, you know, being a podcaster myself, I just know how much back end work goes into all the interviews that you have to do. So it's a little nice of a change of pace for me. So I'm liking it.
Yeah, it is a lot of work, man. It's a lot of people think it's just a matter of like just recording and then posting things. But I mean, there's so much work that goes into it between the graphics, the web stuff, the trying to earn money from the whole damn thing, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's just one of those things where everyone just always sees the final product, right? You know, it's never that behind the scenes, the hours and the hours of editing. And you know how it goes with being a podcaster is that however much time you spent actually recording an episode, it's going to take three times as long to go through and edit that whole thing and piece it all together. And, you know, yeah, a lot of moving parts, like you said. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, so show some appreciation for your podcasters and your content creators.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, dude, I was on your podcast a few weeks ago, the All Around Adventure podcast. And, you know, your story is a really interesting one. You were in the Marine Corps, you're in the Peace Corps, and you're an archaeologist. So you kind of sound like Indiana Jones or something like that. So I wanted to bring you on, hear a little bit about your story. You've got an interesting trek coming up that we're going to talk about. But let's go back to the beginning. Where did it all start for you, man?
Well, like you said, I was in the Marine Corps and yeah, went on to do a few other things. I guess you can say I don't know what I want to be when I grow up. but yeah, so we'll go back to high school. I'm from a really small town in rural Michigan, population 1,100 people. You know, everybody knows everybody. You know, be careful who you ask on a date because y'all just might be related kind of town, you know? And it was my sophomore year, and that's when 9/11 happened. And I remember walking into history class and the wall-mounted TV was on, and which was pretty unusual because, you know, it's never on when you just walk into class, and seldom do we even use the TVs in that classroom to begin with. So I walked into the classroom and I saw that the first tower was on fire, and just being a little bit confused because, you know, just growing up, I've never seen what, you know, like an act of terrorism or a declaration of war would look like, you know. And then here I am now just seeing the single greatest act of terrorism that the world has ever seen, you know, playing out right before me too. And it was also, it was around that time where, you know, being a sophomore, I was contemplating a little bit and thinking about what I was going to be doing after high school. You know, thoughts of college had come to mind because I was a pretty good student, had good grades, and so I could see myself going to college. And I had thought about maybe the military route as well. But when 9/11 happened, the decision was very clear at that point. You know, once I'm through this high school thing, I'm joining the military. And not only did I join the military, but I also chose the Marine Corps because, you know, the Marine Corps has the reputation of being, you know, the toughest branch, you know, that we have. So I enlisted in the delayed entry program in my junior year, spent my whole senior year getting ready for boot camp. And 3 weeks, just 3 weeks after I walked across the stage at graduation, I was on a plane to San Diego to start boot camp. And following boot camp, I was stationed in New River Air Station, North Carolina, which is, uh-huh, you know, just right down the street from Camp Lejeune. I was an administrative clerk with VMX 22, which is a test and evaluation squadron for the V-22 Osprey. Served there for 4 years and then, you know, got out and, you know, just went on to pursue, you know, other cool shit.
What was boot camp like for you?
Man, you know, boot camp was an interesting interesting time. And I think that's putting it a little bit mildly because, you know, it was a really tough thing. But I definitely felt like I went in there very well prepared. And I definitely would have to give credit to the recruiters who were running point on the delayed entry program that I was a part of. You know, PT sessions were really hard. You know, we were, you know, tested a lot on what we'd expect, like actually in boot camp. And, you know, I just went in there with a good feeling. I mean, it was kind of tough because, you know, being a young 18-year-old kid and growing up in a small town where I'm really close to my family, really close to, you know, others in the community, and having a pretty big extended family too that I was close with, you know, just kind of being away from all of that and, you know, my support network that I've had my whole life up until this point, you know, that was pretty challenging. But you know, there was low points, there was a lot of high points, and my senior drill instructor was the absolute devil. And, you know, to this day, if I can genuinely say that there's one man in this world that I'm genuinely afraid of, it would certainly be my senior drill instructor. I mean, I'd love to meet him again someday, but I felt like if I did, I'd probably just be on shaky legs, you know, standing in front of him. But, you know, he really just put us through hell. And, you know, looking back, I was so grateful for that, too, because my platoon, not to brag, we were honor platoon. And I think that was probably because he was willing to invest just that much more into us and making it a little bit harder because, you know, you have a T-shirt in your company, Warrior Soul Apparel, that says hard times breed hard people. And him putting us through those hard times, he bred hard Marines. And, you know, that, and I think that's what contributed to a lot of success that I've had later on in life, even to this day. You know, I still recall on some of the lessons that, you know, he instilled with us and been carrying that with me ever since.
Yeah. You know, I'm friends with my senior drill instructor on Facebook. It's interesting. Yeah. I'm friends with him and I'm friends with the heavy hat. Yeah. I found them both. Found them like 10 years later though, because we didn't have Facebook when I was in boot camp. But, so you get through that, you went to San Diego. You get in the Marine Corps, what was that like for you?
Well, you know, it was a little bit nerve-wracking, I'd say, mostly just because a lot of the structure that I had in boot camp was no longer there because, you know, a lot of people would say that boot camp is hard and this, that, and the other, which of course, don't get me wrong, it very much is, but there was a lot of structure and there wasn't a lot of stuff that you had to think about. You know, when it came to things like time management and keeping up with the routine, you know, your drill instructors did that for you.
Right.
You know, they made sure that you were where you needed to be, when you needed to be there. And when you were, when it was time to eat, they would get you to the chow hall. When it was time to sleep, they would wind things down. You know, winding down, of course, that's kind of relative. I put that in quotations as well. But then when you get out into the fleet, you know, you don't have that structure anymore. You kind of got to figure that out for yourself. And, you know, I will say that kind of took a little bit of a while for me to kind of just get adjusted to. And, you know, and I will admit that I got really, really complacent and maybe and definitely a little bit too comfortable in like my service and things like that to the point where, you know, I kind of let myself go. I became what, you know, we in the Marine Corps refer to, and I'm sure maybe the other branches refer to, you know, these types of Marines, soldiers, sailors as a fat body. You know, I got really fat and I ended up having to get put on a body composition program. And this was a very, very low point in my service because, you know, obviously I'm very unbecoming of a Marine, you know, in that state. And the Marines that were assigned to me as part of this composition program, you know, they're getting up at zero dark 30, having a meet with me at the squadron to go run with me, to do PT with me, and maybe taking time away from their families, you know, or maybe just simply taking a time away from themselves too. I mean, their morning routine was to come and try to get a Marine to work out because he couldn't do it himself, you know? And so that, you know, kind of made me feel pretty bad about myself. And, you know, looking even further, just simply that, though, I also had a really tough realization. And that is the fact that the state that I was in, I could be a liability to my fellow Marines. Now, of course, you know, like I said, I was an administrative clerk. I wasn't an infantryman. But, you know, first and foremost, I was a Marine. And I thought to myself that, you know, if I'm out on the battlefield and I see a wounded Marine, I don't think I'd be able to carry him off. Like, physically, I just don't think I would have been able to do it. You know, I let myself go that much. And also just thinking to myself, like, if we had to cover and move and I was too slow.
Let's break this down a little bit because I think, because we do have a lot of younger guys who watch, right? And guys who are thinking about joining. And obviously we've got the old crusty guys like me and yourself, but we got a lot of younger guys who are thinking about joining and getting in. And one of the things I think that people don't realize is kind of what you said. Once you're out in the fleet, things become a little bit more self-structured and you are responsible for yourself. And one of the things I've said on past episodes is that when you get into the Marine Corps, you have a choice, right? And your choice is to be the best that you could be, or you can go off and you could join the guys. And not to say that everybody who's on the in the smoke pit is bad, but you can go talk shit in the smoke pit and frigging complain about everything, and then you can get fat and you can drink and you play video games all the time when you're not doing your work. So what was it for you that led you down that path? What was the thing, right? Were you just overeating? Were you drinking too much? Were you hanging out in the barracks with the wrong people? What was it?
You know, I probably think, you know, it was a combination of a lot of those things, you know, just, you know, and also this, I wasn't a very good steward with like my finances, like either, because I was, you know, like the Marine Corps was my first job. And so now I got like all this money. It's like, oh, well, I can go out to eat here and there. And of course I wasn't very like nutrition savvy or exercise savvy as I am now. So you'll see myself doing a lot of like going out and, you know, going to places like Hooters and getting chicken wings and all kinds of like, you know, other like, you know, stuff I wouldn't really, you know, go.
Not much else for a boot to do in Cherry Point, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and then also one thing that I think kind of sort of made me think, I guess maybe kind of like led me down this wayside thing is that my squadron was actually a non-deployable squadron. Like our sole mission was to test and evaluate, you know, the V-22 Osprey. Cause at the time the Osprey wasn't operational yet. And so I also think that maybe just the thought that I wasn't going to be deploying anytime soon kind of, you know, just sort of, you know, the idea of readiness wasn't really quite in my head too. And then, you know, there was other things too, you know, going back to me having a little bit more money than what I did before, you know, I could afford like the latest and greatest like video game systems and video games. And then also I found myself just not really managing stress like too well, which was kind of surprising because, you know, especially when someone who comes from a stressful situation like boot camp, you think that, you know, having a good, solid mindset and also just being, you know, with all the stress that you have to deal with in boot camp, you think I would have dealt with it a little bit better, but I would still kind of let just like the stress of, you know, fleet life and other things and being homesick and, you know, this, that, and the other kind of really get to me. So it's like after a day's work, I just want to go back to the barracks. I just want to relax and, you know, maybe go out to eat later. And I got pizza, you know, showing up.
Yeah, just trying to get that, trying to hit that comfort button all the time, right?
You know, exactly. So, but then I ultimately saw what trying to just, you know, be comfortable, you know, ultimately led me. Like I said, I got fat. I got put on, you know, the body composition program. And then just, again, recalling on the fact that if I did see a wounded Marine on the battlefield, I probably wouldn't be able to carry him off. I probably wouldn't be able to keep up with anybody. I'd be out of breath, or I could slow someone down if I get hurt and someone has to carry my fat ass off the battlefield, you know? So basically I could get Marines killed in the state that I was in.
No, big time, big time. Now, did this change? Were you able to turn it around during your career? And because you were put on that probably held your promotions back as well, right? You probably got stuck at a rank for a little bit, and were you able to turn this around? And if so, how did you do it?
Oh yeah, man. I definitely turned around. And fortunately, you know, I kind of had this tough realization pretty early on where I was able to start tackling it right away. And, you know, really one of the things that I started doing certainly a lot more of was running, and also just, you know, spending less time like eating out, going to the chow hall a little bit more, and also not just simply going to the chow hall, but also thinking about like what I was, you know, putting on my tray, you know, at the chow hall, you know, and, you know, spending maybe a little bit more time just going to the salad bar to get stuff rather than going to the dessert line and stuff like that. So I definitely started like running more, and I became kind of like one of those like weird Marines where I was, you know, spending a lot of time just like out running, where, you know, a lot of the other Marines in my squadron were doing what I had initially done, you know, just coming back and being in the barracks and, you know, popping open a few beers and, you know, playing Call of Duty and all that stuff. And so, and then I had spoken to another Marine who I was on duty with one night, a sergeant, and he was telling me about how he ran the Marine Corps Marathon the year prior. And I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. And, you know, he showed me a couple of pictures and stuff like that. And then we had another Marine show up at the squadron, and, you know, she's been like a runner her whole life, has completed multiple marathons, and just kind of hearing about their stories, I thought to myself, could I do that too? You know, I mean, is it possible for me to do that too? And, you know, and at this point, I've never really, like, I wasn't a high school athlete or anything like that. I've never really taken on like a physical endeavor like that before. But, you know, I started training and I ran into a couple of snags. I got IT band syndrome really bad, which, you know, that's referred to as runner's knee. That put me out for a few weeks. And, you know, I looked into like certain supplements like glucosamine to help with that and different stretches. And eventually I got myself into good enough shape where in 2007, I ran the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C. You know, I wouldn't say I finished in the fastest time, but I finished it. And, you know, just an overwhelming sense of pride at that point, because like I said, I had really been low early on in my military career, just, you know, with the state that I became in and just how I was simply a liability to the Marines around me, or the liability I could have potentially been for Marines on the battlefield should have come to that. And just kind of knowing that, okay, now I'm in much better shape. I feel really good. And especially, and what was especially important to me as a Marine at that point was I'm now an asset. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm someone that, you know, someone would feel more confident, you know, having like, you know, watch their back on the battlefield. And not to mention that if like someone like a civilian saw me in uniform, they'd feel more hopeful than they would be dreading. Like if they saw me like, you know, in my Charlies as a fat body, they'll be like, oh shit, you know, that's who has to go and fight on our behalf. Damn. But I think at that point with how I've was able to change things around, I think maybe someone would see me and actually feel a little bit more hopeful than they would, you know, the latter
or the other. Nice. So you were able to turn that around. And then, so did you end up doing the Marine Corps Marathon and completing it, or did you do another marathon or anything like that?
Well, it was just the Marine Corps Marathon, and yep, I did finish it. I think my time was like 4 hours and 15 minutes, and that was a hell of a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then, but that was like about within like my last year. I think I was just starting my fourth year of my enlistment, and then it was in like a June of 2008 is when I had ultimately got out and moved on to pursue other ventures.
Gotcha. So around June of 2008, you were deciding to get out. Now, what were you thinking about doing when you got out?
Well, you know, just probably just the normal go back, use the GI Bill and go to college. And it was something I actually did have squared away before I actually got out. Like I already applied to the school that I was interested in and the program I was interested in, and I did get accepted. So that really kind of helped with the transition, was because I knew exactly I had a plan, and I had, you know, put steps in place to actually, you know, execute on that plan. So I got out, I went back to Michigan, which is, you know, where I'm from originally, like I mentioned, and I, you know, just went to be just a regular, just Joe college student. And I majored in elementary education initially, and I was there for about 2 years. And I'll actually rewind a little bit. I ended up getting my associate's degree while I was on active duty. So I had an associate's degree before I got out. So I only had 2 years remaining before I was able to get my bachelor's. So I returned to Michigan and I completed my bachelor's degree. And then it was around 2011 when I wrapped that up. And then from there, that's when I went.
What'd you end up getting your degree in? You said you started in elementary education, but what'd you end up getting it in?
Oh, right. Yeah. It was elementary education.
Okay.
That I got my bachelor's in. Yeah.
Gotcha. And so you do that, and then, you know, college is done. Did you go and think about trying to become a teacher, or did you apply for jobs like that? Or what were you thinking?
Yeah, I did want to become a teacher, but at the time, the job market for teaching, especially in Michigan, was just downright terrible. You know, they were closing schools left and right. They were trying to merge schools, and there were far more licensed teachers in Michigan than there were jobs for everybody. And by the time I had finished up school too, I was kind of, you know, just coming out of like the hiring window for the next school year and didn't have anything lined up. So I just kind of thought to myself, well, now what? You know, what am I supposed to do? And I didn't come this far just to, you know, simply be unemployed, you know? Mm-hmm. So I started looking at opportunities, and I cultivated a little bit of an adventurous spirit at this point too, because it was also when I was going for my undergrad that I had my first major international travel experience. I did a study abroad to Japan for a couple of weeks, and that kind of really got me bit with the travel bug. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, I kind of want more of that too. Like I want to get out there. I want to see more of the world. And kind of cutting a long story short here, because I could talk about this certain thing for a long time, but I ended up choosing to go into the Peace Corps because the Peace Corps has an education sector where they need teachers to go into, you know, rural places and like, you know, these developing countries to work with teachers in like villages and local communities. And so I applied for that and I got accepted. I was invited to go to the Gambia in West Africa, where I would go and live there for 2 years as a teacher trainer. So teaching other teachers how to become better teachers. So that's what I did. And, you know, that was the next big chapter.
So, yeah, the Peace Corps is an interesting way to serve the country, because, and this is the thing, like, I think some people hear Peace Corps and they think hippies and things like that, but you are serving the United States government when you're going to the Peace Corps, and you are, you're heading over there and you're going into an area that is highly undeveloped. And you are assisting either through education or through commerce or through something to help improve that country, right?
Yeah, definitely. Because there's different facets that Peace Corps volunteers can be called to try to serve in. Like I said, I was an education volunteer. So mm-hmm. I'm working in the schools, helping to improve, you know, the educational system. You also have volunteers who go there for health purposes. You know, mm-hmm. they're working in like local clinics, or they're working with their communities to teach things as different, like different things pertaining to things like, you know, HIV and AIDS prevention, to just mm-hmm. good hygienic practices. And you also have environmental engineers, volunteers who will go in there and they'll show, like, they'll teach like sustainable agricultural practices mm-hmm. and things like that. And so there's definitely a lot of different approaches that, or I guess avenues that volunteers can be called to do when they go into these developing countries to try to serve. But for me, it was the educational side of things.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so what was that experience like for you? Were you with other members of the Peace Corps? Were you out there on your own? Were you the only one in that village? Was there a lot of direction you got there, or were you still unstructured?
Well, starting off, it was pretty structured, and I was around other volunteers for the most part, because the first 3 months, it's all training. You know, we're doing language training, we're, you know, doing cultural training and the like. And so we'll be in like villages, mm-hmm. but the village will have like maybe, I don't know, like six to nine other volunteers living within it. So we can still go and interact with one another during that whole experience. But once training is over, we all go to our own villages and it's just us. So by the time the 3 months is over, I was sent off to a village deep into the country. I mean, granted, the Gambia is not that big. It's actually the smallest country on the entire African continent. It's about like half the size of New Jersey, so it's not that big. But I was placed in the village, the farthest away from the capital, farther than any other volunteer, you know, was. And I think that was kind of done deliberately by my supervisor, because she knew where I was coming from. She knew that I had the military background, and you know, she could recognize, I guess, my strengths, you know, her words, you know, not mine. Uh-huh. And so she put me in that village way out there. And so I was there by myself, and, you know, it was a little bit of a tough transition at first, because, you know, here I was in this rural village. The house that I lived in was a square hut, you know, probably about the size of my bedroom that I'm in right now. It wasn't that big. There's no electricity. There's no running water. I didn't have a flushable toilet. My toilet was literally a hole in the ground in the backyard. And, you know, so you go over there, you make sure your aim is on point, and, you know, you got to, like, you know, just squat just perfectly, you know, to do your business.
And did you know, just keep burying it, or did you empty that hole, or what was that like? Were you burning it like you used to, or?
Not quite to that extent. You know, actually it was a full on pit latrine. It was actually kind of brilliant. It was just a really, 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 really deep dug hole. And they had like kind of put like some sort of like cement platform like on top of it. So it sinks like to the bottom. And also I found that I was the first volunteer to actually serve in this particular village. So the house I was living in and this pit latrine, it was all brand new. You know, no one else had been there before me. So when I got there, the pit latrine was fresh for all intents and purposes.
Gotcha.
And so basically anything that was down at the bottom of that hole, you know, it was done by me, you know. so that definitely helped quite a bit. But so it was a little bit of an interesting transition, because, you know, here I was suddenly deprived of all these, you know, first world, I'll pretty much just say pleasures that I was so used to up in this mm-hmm. point. And I was about like 26 years old when I went to the Peace Corps. So for a quarter century, I was so used to having electricity, running water, mm-hmm. you know, internet, and all these luxuries. But suddenly all of that was gone within the snap of the fingers. So you can say that it took a little bit of work, you know, just to get there, and also to realize that I'm going to have to live that way for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was an interesting time.
So while you're there, right, you're doing this job, did you meet a lot of friends? Did you have like acquaintances? Did you form like a group or anything like that? What was social life like there for you?
Well, you know, trying to get along and get to know my village as much as possible. Now, what made it a little bit tricky was that, you know, my village was actually a little bit of a larger village than that of some of the other volunteers. You know, my village, the predominant tribal group was the Sarahules. And the Sarahules are known for being kind of like the entrepreneurs of the Gambia. You know, they're a minority ethnic group in the country, but they're known for like their entrepreneurial endeavors and their skills, their trade and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So my village was a little bit more, you know, well off, you can say. And I kind of put that in quotations too, because that's relative. So it's a little bit larger, a little bit of a larger village. So it wasn't really the type of setting where I could really get to know like everybody, because there were so many. So I really just kind of clung a little bit more closely to my host family. You know, I had some older host brothers, and you know, my host father was amazing too. And my host father had two wives, because polygamous marriages are a thing in the Gambia, which I also found kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just doing stuff with, you know, playing with like the younger kids that make up my host family too. And, you know, I had like kind of like some other like go-to people that I would interact with in the village, you know, mostly some of like the village elders that, you know, spoke English pretty well. And, you know, were also well-traveled themselves. And, but it was really one of those things where, you know, if I could, I would try to, you know, interact with some of the other Peace Corps volunteers as best that I could, because as much as I was trying to integrate with the culture that I was now a part of, there were definitely days where I was just basically saying to myself, okay, I need to be American for a day. You know, I need to hop on the bike. I need to, you know, ride a few miles to go to the next village where I know another Peace Corps volunteer is, and just, you know, hang out with him or her for a little bit. And like I said, just be American for a day, mm-hmm. be American for a day. And so I did form pretty close connections with some of the other nearby volunteers. And, you know, we were all kind of just struggling with the same things, you know, like isolation was getting to us over time. You know, a lot of physical discomforts that we had to deal with as well, because it was so freaking hot there. It was like 107 degrees pretty much every single day. And, you know, yeah. like I said, there's no electricity in the house, so there's no AC for me to, you know, flick on or anything like that. And, you know, we also had to deal with like radical illnesses. Like I contracted dysentery, I contracted Giardia, and I'll leave everyone to just kind of go and look those up for themselves, because it fucking sucks. I'll just say it that way.
Yeah.
And so, but the volunteers that I did go see, you know, I'm still friends with, you know, to this day. And they were also a very good support network following Peace Corps service as well, because, you know, I also had a really tough transition coming home from my time there, and just trying to get adjusted to, you know, life in the first world again. So, but yeah, you know, it's just kind of like how, you know, Marines just as well, when they're all together going through a similar hardship together, you know, you tend to form pretty strong bonds, you know, that way. So it was kind of sort of the same thing with a lot of the Peace Corps volunteers that I had close to me. And, you know, also just getting together with them whenever we'd go to like the capital city, you know, we'd have a good times together. And, you know, like I said, strong bonds were formed for sure.
So after that 2 years, you mentioned the transition coming back was difficult for you. What was it like? Did you go back to Michigan afterwards? Where'd you end up settling down?
Yeah, I did go back to Michigan afterwards, you know, to go spend some time with family and things like that, and just kind of get caught up there. But yeah, it was a really, really hard transition. I would almost dare say that the transition of being back in the U.S. was probably harder than the transition that I had when I initially left to go to the Gambia. And we actually have a joke in the Peace Corps. We say that the Peace Corps is actually a 4-year commitment, 1 year to apply, 2 years to serve in country, and at least 1 year to get readjusted to life back home. Mm-hmm. Because actually applying was terrible too. It was easier for me to get in the Marine Corps than it was to get in the Peace Corps, uh-huh. if you can believe that. But when I first got home, you know, there was that initial just like wow of, yes, I'm finally home. I can see family, and, you know, lots of hugs and happiness and laughter and all that good stuff. But it didn't take very long before I kind of started observing things that kind of just sort of really got to me a little bit. And a lot of those were just first world problems that I was observing, where, you know, I was at a restaurant one time, and, you know, I had this grown woman, she was complaining about like the taste of her ice water. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, Oh, wow. You poor, poor thing. Yeah. The taste of your ice water that you didn't even have to work for, that someone brought to you and you have ice cubes in it. Because, you know, it made me think of like my host sisters back in the Gambia, where my host sisters were typically the ones that had to collect water, because there was just a series of taps in the villages. They would only come on for like a 2-hour window each day. And so like my 10-year-old host sister, Numa, would be out there filling up water in like buckets and pails. I would have to help her like hoist them so she can balance them on her head. And she would walk back to her house with that. And one of my host's mothers would be there to like help her out. But it's just the fact that I was coming from somewhere where just to fulfill basic needs meant that you had to get off your ass and work for them every single day. And then it wasn't something that I could just simply, you know, waste or anything like that. Like I had to ration water every single day. I had to like take inventory of, okay, I have this much that I could use for drinking. I have this much I could use to take a bucket bath and, you know, this much to wash clothes and dishes with, et cetera. But, you know, here in the States, no one really has to think about that.
Right.
You know, you can just go to your tap whenever you want and have fresh, clean water like at your disposal at any time, which there's a large percentage of the world population who doesn't even have access to clean water. So just hearing complaints like that about what to me were pretty trivial things, and also people getting upset like if food's taking too long at a restaurant, you know, the food that they don't even have to work for either. Because like my host mothers would take anywhere from about 2 to 3 hours of cooking every single day to prepare like, you know, lunch and dinner. And that was cooking like with a wood fire with like this big black cauldron, trying to boil rice and just, you know, just to get something really, really basic for many people, because they had a lot of mouths to feed, you know, with all the kids that they had and stuff like that though, too. So that was a really tough transition for me, because, you know, just kind of seeing what it's like in other parts of the world, the conditions that a lot of people have it, and what they don't have available to them that we have available in an abundance here stateside. And then a lot of people would choose to complain about those things. It did take a really long time for me to get over that. And even sometime, I would even say today, I still kind of deal with that. And so, but ultimately I did kind of come to the realization that, you know, it's going to be really hard for people to relate and experiences like that if they haven't like experienced those myself. So I would share aspects like that with people who were willing to listen. But ultimately, I just knew that, okay, if I can't change everybody or change everybody's view or perspective on the world, then at least I know what I can do with myself. And that's what I use to keep myself in check this day. It's like, I mean, because, you know, I'm not immune to bad days either. You know, I do, right. At times, I will admit, I will get frustrated with like pretty stupid shit every now and then. But what keeps me in check is pondering on those experiences that I've had, knowing that, okay, Josh, you really should have no reason to be complaining about the fact that you got to change a flat tire on your car.
Right.
So you got a car, for crying out loud.
Right.
We're over in my village, but you know, my host father's probably walking really far to go collect something that he needs. Or once again, my host sisters, they're carrying all these heavy buckets and pails of water in 107-degree heat to make sure that their family has water to drink. There's no reason for me to be getting upset about something trivial like having to change a tire on my car.
You know? Well, that, and I think from the other perspective, and this is true for, I think, Marines coming back from deployment and other service members coming back from deployment, is to remember that everybody has a different experience, right? And everybody's experience is relative. So like, you know, that person who's complaining about her ice water, she doesn't know. She doesn't know what life is like across the
right.
world. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, just kind of remembering that. And I think that no matter what you do, it's never a good idea to go into anything with a chip on your shoulder, right? It's never a good idea to go into anything with a chip on your shoulder, because again, all you're doing is alienating. Right? That's all that's going to happen, is you're going to alienate people. You're going to make yourself look like an asshole, and you're going to get people who are going to be, they're going to be like, oh, what's this dude's problem? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want. Because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview.
Yeah. So that was definitely something like I had kind of come to the realization with, and that's sort of what sort of brought me down and started to help with the adjustment a little bit more. So, because I know that at the end of the day, you know, there's some people it shouldn't really, I'm not going to make it my duty to go and like change people's perspective. I mean, especially if they don't really want to try to change it, or if they're just kind of content with like, I guess, who they are for the most part. But, you know, for those who are willing to listen, and then I'm assuming for anyone who's listening to this podcast right now is probably interested in, you know, self-development and maybe, you know, enhancing their perspective and views on the world and so on and so forth, you know, realizing that, okay, maybe these are the types of people that I could kind of share these kind of experiences with, right? Because they could probably appreciate it. They could probably resonate with it. And, you know, maybe they'll be, you know, interested in seeking out similar experiences like the ones I'm describing, like, you know, as well. So it does kind of also made me think about being pretty deliberate and intentional with, you know, who I'm going to try to, you know, align myself with. And, you know, that's how I connect with, you know, people like you who are out there getting after it and, you know, kind of want to seek out these similar views and perspectives. So there's a little bit of deliberate and intentionality that comes from, you know, this as well.
Nice. Well, what was the next move for you? So you did that, you came back, you're dealing with the transition. What was the next plan for you? What was the next thing?
Well, I was hoping to maybe pursue teaching as well, but something kind of changed within me from having this whole experience. You know, there's this saying, and I'm not sure where it's from or where exactly I've heard it, but it's that he who has returned from an adventure is not the same as he who had left. Mm-hmm. So again, I just recognize so many changes within myself that, you know, what that was just made me a lot different and made me just kind of like look out, have a different outlook on my future, I guess I'll say. Because initially the plan before I left for Peace Corps was go to Peace Corps, have 2 years of something to do, get some experience, come back with a competitive edge to pursue teaching yet again. But, you know, interacting with this culture that, you know, I was completely unfamiliar with before I actually went there. Like, I've never even heard of the Gambia until I was invited to go there. So here I am with this culture that, you know, everything is different. It's a different religion. You know, everyone there was practices Islam, where I'm Catholic, and, you know, they all speak like a language that basically not even a percentage of the world population can speak, and just being completely fascinated with what I was observing. And that just kind of made me think about, it just made me very, very curious, because, you know, I'm a very curious person, you know, by nature. And I'd say, like, you know, we all are, you know, I think curiosity is a very, you know, deep emotion and characteristic of all humans that we've had, like, pretty much since the beginning. And so seeing this a little bit more and just being a little bit more curious about this, you know, I thought about maybe pursuing that a little bit more to the next phase of my education. And that, and so one thing led to another. Again, this is cutting a long story short, but I ended up choosing to go to England for a whole year to study archaeology.
Nice.
And so I went to the University of York, which is in the northern part of England, and I got into their Master of Arts in Field Archaeology program. And I only had a year to crank out of this entire master's program. And one thing that was actually really cool about this was that the GI Bill covers many foreign institutions. So for my fellow veterans listening, if you still got that GI Bill and you're maybe looking for an adventure and a chance to get abroad, you could potentially maybe look at getting a degree from a foreign institution. And, you know, you'll get your tuition covered. You also get BAH, you know, for which obviously the rates vary depending on where you are. And so that's what I did. I went to England for a whole year, got my master's degree, and now it's actually what I do professionally now. I'm a professional archaeologist that operates here in the southeast of the U.S.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So you went over there, cranked out this master's program, what was life like in England for you? Because I've been to England. I worked for a company in England for a while. How did you find English culture, the English people?
Oh man, I loved living in England. I mean, because
cool place.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's actually one of it's one of the few places that I lived in my life that I wasn't ready to leave when my time was up. Because you think about like some of the other things that I've done up until this point, you know, Marine Corps, college, Peace Corps. By the time my stint in each one of those was up, I was pretty much ready to move on.
Yeah,
but living in England, man. I wasn't really quite ready to go. I mean, I had a sweet flat, you know, I was close to the city center. Uh-huh. You know, I had my go-to CrossFit box, my go-to gym. I did Krav Maga every single Monday. I had my yoga classes that I would go to on Sundays. Yes, I do yoga. Don't laugh. And then I also had like my go-to like health food store that I would go, like basically I just really come to really call the place home. And, you know, every time I would walk into the city center, I'm looking at buildings that are centuries old.
Right.
And I just remember just how fascinated I was, especially with someone who was pursuing archaeology and just being in a city like this. You know, they still had, you know, walls that were built by the Romans, you know, nearly two millennia ago that were still surrounding the city center. And I'll go into like a secondhand bookstore and someone like the cashier has like these leather bound books, like on the bookshelf behind her cash register. She pulls one out for me. And this thing was like written like over 500 years ago.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's just casually sitting on a bookshelf behind her cash register. And I'm like, you do realize that that book predates my Declaration of Independence, right?
Right, right.
And so it was just so amazing. And, you know, and the Brits were really cool. They were very chill. And I would pretty much say for the most part, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot of drama like observed that like, and I don't want to bash on like my own people here in the States, but you know, typically when I observe negativity, whether it's on social media or mainstream media, I think, you know, we have a tendency to kind of just like outbeat like the rest of the world in that department. Cause like the Brits, they weren't very dramatic. Like anytime I had a British friend, like post something on social media, it's like, oh, getting ready for afternoon tea time and getting some delicious cake and so on and so forth. You know, it was all pretty upbeat and positive. And, you know, so it was really chill. And, you know, there wasn't really a whole lot of hustle and bustle. Like, even though York was a pretty large city of about 200,000 people, it's just, I never felt like, which was, I guess you can say that's relative. I mean, coming from a small town of 1,100, it was pretty big for me. But again, it wasn't, there were a lot of hustle and bustle. And I also really like that everyone there was pretty active for the most part. Like the way most British cities are designed, there is designed to accommodate like walkers, pedestrians, cyclists, like a lot more. So they had designated bike lanes on every single street. People who are driving in cars know to look out for cyclists. And that's how I pretty much like got around. I didn't really, you know, take a lot of public transport. I bought myself a cheap bicycle at a secondhand shop. I cycled everywhere. And, you know, that was just pretty cool. So you look around, like most of the Brits, they all look pretty fit too, because awesome. Everyone is just making a point to just be mobile every single day and just, you know, get up and move. So it was pretty cool. And again, I just loved living there. And I had a chance to see other parts of the country. I went to the Peak District, which is one of their national parks. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful scenery there. Made it down to London a couple of times, which that's to this day.
I love London. London's awesome. It's a really great city. I used to work with London Real out there, and I visited a couple of times, and it was pretty awesome. I want to ask you this because I want to get in your podcast, but you know, your job is an archaeologist. And are you working with a university down in Florida? What do you do on a daily basis? I know it's nothing like Indiana Jones. A lot of it's like you're going out there and you're trying to painstakingly dig around things that could fall apart if you pull them out the wrong way and things like that, right?
Yeah. So not quite like Indiana Jones. I mean, you know, I'm not out punching Nazis in the face or anything like that, or battling with other forces of evil for these ancient magical mystical artifacts. But it's very much a scientific discipline. And going to the first part of your question, you know, I work for the Park Service. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we do a lot of archaeology here in the Southeast. We go to various national parks, and we do what's called compliance archaeology. And basically what that means is that, let's say the park wants to build something or do some sort of undertaking that's going to involve disturbing the ground. We got to test the grounds first to make sure that during the action of actually building whatever it is they want to build, you know, they're not going to destroy any cultural heritage remains or, you know, anything like that. So that's been giving me the opportunity to go to various national parks and also work in areas of the park that the public probably won't really ever get to see. You know, we can get pretty remote at times. You know, in fact, I've had certain parks that I would go to where I would have to take a boat out to an island in the Gulf of Mexico, and we'd have the island to ourselves because no one else is there. Or like I'm taking a helicopter to these remote sites, like in the middle of this vast area of wetlands that you can't get to any other way unless if you use a helicopter. You know, so it's pretty exciting stuff. So, but basically, it can be pretty meticulous work because, you know, there's a lot of like data that we have to collect actually out in the field, because it's not just simply about finding artifacts then and of themselves. It's about the context in which we find those artifacts. And, you know, because it's like, where did we find this artifact? How deep in the ground was it? What is it exactly? And what can we identify what the artifact actually is? Can we date it? You know, how long it might have been there? So that's what my field days are like. But a lot of work is also in the lab where I'm cleaning the artifacts, I'm analyzing them again, trying to determine exactly what they are. Because there's different like styles of, there's different types of things like pottery, and things like that. And there's certain indicators to look for. So it's a really good mix because, you know, obviously, you know, being kind of a Marine and just being, you know, kind of like a little bit of a knuckle dragger, I love getting out there in the field and getting dirty and, mm-hmm. you know, just immersing myself in nature. And again, we're the only ones like out there, there's no one else around. So there's a lot of peace to that, as well. And then another half of it is, yeah, actually being in the lab, just going through all the stuff. And sometimes I got to write reports, which is a little bit of the less glamorous part of what I do. But, you know, man, I love it. You know, it has been a very fulfilling career path for me. So sometimes it can get hard to work full time doing archaeology and trying to do this podcasting thing,
right.
You know, because I'm kind of living a double life there. But tell you what, man, it's awesome.
So, yeah, your podcast called the All Around Adventure Podcast. It's about travel, going places that normally people wouldn't go to. What made you decide to start the podcast, though?
Well, kind of going back to just you know, just being of service, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, simple answer, like right there. I mean, I joined the Marine Corps with one of the core reasons being because I wanted to be of service. And I joined the Peace Corps once again to continue to be of service. And, you know, I think doing the podcasting thing, that's another way for me to be of service and also to add value. You know, initially, I will say it didn't start out that way. Like initially, All Around Adventure was more or less of a personal podcast where I would just, you know, simply just tell travel stories and things like that, which, you know, was cool and all, but I realized I wasn't really providing a whole lot of value just talking about myself. I mean, maybe I was, but that wasn't the intent, you know? So that's when I started adding the personal development component to it, because it was a journey that I was on, you know, with things like reading books and, you know, following like influential people on social media and the like. And so that's why I started it. That's when the podcast kind of came into the picture as well. And so I've been doing that for a couple of years. And basically the whole purpose of the All Around Adventure podcast, we have the tagline, you know, amazing tales from afar and the all important life lessons that go along with them. Because having these experiences of, you know, traveling the world, seeing some amazing things, interacting with cultures, and like you said, you know, getting to go to places that maybe a few people have, you know, before me has. So... But I just found that I was learning so many things about myself, so many valuable life lessons that I was taking from those experiences. And I've come to find that so many other travelers out there were experiencing the exact same thing. So I'm getting them to come on my show, extracting their stories and extracting their life lessons. And the goal is to hopefully, you know, to share these with other people so that they can become all around better versions of themselves, you know, hence the name All Around Adventure.
That's awesome. Now, you've also gone on a lot of treks yourself, and you have a huge trek coming up that you're planning right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. It's I call it Operation Dual Trek. And what I'm doing is I'm going to undertake a challenge that I've never done before. You know, I've done a lot of, you know, physical feats leading up to this point. You know, as I mentioned earlier, I ran the Marine Corps Marathon. You know, I've fought in an MMA cage fight and won before. I cycled across the entire country of the Gambia, which is about 300 miles, and, you know, done some obstacle course races and stuff like that. But I've never completed a through hike before. And that's what I'm going to be doing in South America. I'm looking to walk the entire length of two South American countries, Paraguay and Uruguay. And the combined distance of both these countries that I'm going to be walking is a little over 1,000 miles. You know, for all intents and purposes, you know, depending on how you look at it, it's probably not that far. You know, it's not as far as, like, let's say the Appalachian Trail or the Pacific Crest Trail, but still, I've never done something like this before. And not only that, I'm doing it in a foreign country. Like, I've never been to either of these countries before. And that's part of the appeal, because there, it's quote unquote uncharted territory for me. And I don't really know anybody who's been to either of these countries before. Mm-hmm. So they're a total mystery to me.
Right.
Never been to South America before either. And so I've chosen to do this. I'm going to be stepping off in June, and the objective behind this, and the reason why I call it Operation Dual Trek, is because I'm looking to raise money for a nonprofit organization called American Veterans Archaeological Recovery. And what this nonprofit does is they take wounded veterans, they take them out into various archaeological digs, and with the purpose being of, you know, getting them to interact with other veterans, giving them a mission, because, you know, at this point, you know, they've spent a lot of time, you know, protecting our country, protecting our way of life, and this will give them a chance to protect some cultural heritage, you know, through the work of archaeology. And it's not just like an adventure vacation, you know, just come here, just dig, and then we send you back, and you know, you're right back to where you were. You know, maybe if archaeology is something that you think you find that you might be interested in pursuing further, you know, they will give them like some insights, you know, give them a couple of references as to where they can go from there. Or if they're going to be, say, they want to go and just pursue something else now, okay, well, here's how we can maybe help you with that next step. So it's a little bit more of a program than it is just like an adventure vacation, so to speak. But there is some adventure aspect in it as well, because the AVAR, as their acronym is, you know, they're looking to do some digs and taking veterans to some pretty amazing places around the world. One of them being is that they are teaming up with the National Park Service and I believe it's the, oh goodness, actually I have it right here, the American Battlefield Trust to go up to Saratoga, because The Battle of Saratoga was a pretty pivotal moment in the Revolutionary War. So They're going to try and get some veterans to go and do some excavation work up there. But also in a lot of places abroad too, like they want to go to Sicily, they want to take veterans awesome. to Israel and also to England. So there's a lot of opportunities there. But the reality is to do that, though, it can get pretty expensive because they want to cover the cost of food, lodging. They probably won't be able to cover airfare. Mm-hmm. But so there's a lot of money that goes into that. And, you know, they're a nonprofit. So what my objective is to raise money, you know, because obviously I am an archaeologist. I've found a lot of benefits and I can see how it's been beneficial. Not to mention, I've been on one of my earliest digs in my career was through AVAR, and it helped set me on the path to the career and to what I'm working now. So yeah, they're doing amazing things, and they're also going to be teaming up with Defense POW MIA Accountability Agency, which is an agency that works to try to recover the remains of... Right, yeah. So another thing that they do is they are partnering with the Defense POW and MIA Accountability Agency, which their mission is to find like those who are missing from previous wars. You know, an example being downed pilots from World War II from the Pacific Theater. So they're working along with them in what they call Operation Keeping Faith. So combining like the DPAA's mission of finding those who are missing, you know, with AVAR's mission of, you know, looking out for the well-being of our veterans. So they're doing a lot of amazing things, and the money raised from this expedition, I'm not seeing any of it. You know, I've asked AVAR to set up a separate GoFundMe account that they're going to have sole control over, and I'm self-financing the total cost of this expedition. So all donations raised, I'm not seeing a cent of it. It's all going to go exactly to what it's supposed to do, because I'm not about to raise money to have people help me pay for my trip. You know, it is exactly for what I want it for, because, you know, I'm close friends with the CEO of this organization, Stephen Humphreys. He's a former Air Force captain and a really good archaeologist. And so I just know that the money is going to be used for exactly what it's intended to, you know?
That's awesome, man. So, that's awesome. Why Paraguay and Uruguay?
Well, again, mostly just because they're a total mystery to me. And, you know, I kind of have a little bit of a joke about Paraguay. I say that it's the country that Google forgot, because, you know, how on like Google Maps where there's that little like dude that you could drop somewhere on the street to get like a street view of that area. If you were to go down to Paraguay and pull like that dude out, nothing is going to almost nothing highlights in this country, which makes planning a pretty difficult, because I don't really know exactly what to expect. So to me, this is going to be a very raw adventure. Like, I'm not going to have like a camera crew following me. I'm not going to have a support vehicle. I'm going to be self-filming and things like that. And it's going to rely on me, hopefully, just trying to befriend people that I find across them along the way, because I'm probably going to need some aid from people as I go, because I'm not sure exactly, you know, how much I'm going to have in the way of like resupply points and stuff like that. And, you know, so, and again, it's just going along with me just simply just being curious, you know. Again, curiosity is something that we as humans, we have to the very deepest level. You can see that from the beginning when people thought about like what's beyond the next hill and they started wandering that direction, or where someone saw this massive body of water in front of them and decided to build something that could float to see what was beyond that horizon. Hmm. You know, this is kind of the same thing for me right now, man, because, you know, adventure, it lies deep within our hearts, I'd say. I mean, I'm sure you could probably recall yourself like getting excited about seeing a world map and wondering what's out there, you know? So to me, like that's just really exciting. And, you know, and then also I've never been to South America before too. And I have a goal. It's part of my bucket list to go to all seven continents. So I'm going to, this is where, you know, I'm going to do my next expedition. So, and also, you know, kind of another weird reason is because I'm trying to give myself a reason to actually learn Spanish, because I grew up not knowing how to speak Spanish and having a last name like Guerrero, which literally means warrior in Spanish, and not being able to speak the language myself. I don't know. It's kind of a shame. So this gives me another reason to learn.
No, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, Josh, number one, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to acknowledge you for your desire to serve in all capacities across the military, the Peace Corps, and now what you're doing now. And we're going to get links for both your podcast and for this track to raise money for veterans to pursue archaeology on the show notes for this episode. So you guys at home, be sure to check this out. Any last words for our listeners, Josh?
Well, just the thing that I want to say to any of my fellow veterans are listening, another reason why I want to do this expedition is because I want to showcase what we're capable of. Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, a lot of times when veterans, you know, when they get out of the military and they find themselves like, you know, without a purpose, and they might find themselves floundering a little bit, you know, just keep in mind is that we are capable of just doing incredible things. And I know that because we already have. If you look at boot camp and just serving in the fleet, going on deployments, okay, you have done something that very few people in this world can achieve. I mean, like the veteran community, we make up just like a few percent of the world population. Only like that small of a percentage has done what we've done. And so you're capable of doing so many amazing things because you already have. So just reflect on how far you've come. Anytime that you find yourself in a situation where you think that you might be stuck or you're not sure what to do, know that you have what it takes to get through it, and then find it. Get yourself a plan of action and go and attack. So that's the last thing I want to say there.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Couldn't have said that better myself. Well, Josh, thank you again, man. And to everybody out there, definitely check this stuff out. Check Josh's podcast out. It's awesome. We did an episode together a few weeks ago. I thought it was a great episode. I enjoyed being on his show. He's a great interviewer. And he's got some amazing personalities who come onto his show. And for those of you out there with an adventurous spirit who want to travel, definitely a show you should check out. So listen, guys, we'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content. And this is Chris and Josh out. Get out there and live your best lives while you can. All right, guys, that is my interview with Joshua Guerrero from the All Around Adventure podcast. I highly encourage you to go check out his podcast. He talks about a lot of really great places. He also talks to a lot of great people. I've also got an interview up there with him, so you should definitely check that out as well. And yeah, man, I'm also going to have all the links to his show and to his trek that he's going to be completing, so you guys can go check that out as well. Listen, guys, again, I want to thank you all for putting your faith into this podcast, for giving me your time, for following along on this journey. Like I said at the beginning of the show, if you can, please head over and write us a written rating and review on iTunes. Share these episodes out And if you want to support the podcast in other ways, there's a number of ways of doing so. You can head over to warriorsoul.shop, get yourself an awesome piece of gear. We got some great t-shirts. Or if you want to help yourself, there's a number of ways we have for you to do that. You can head over to warriorsoul.academy, where you can take advantage of a lot of the fitness programs that I've written over my time period. I've got some great fat loss programs. I've got a great shoulder building program up there. I also have some great business courses. For those of you who are interested in learning how I put together a business surrounding this podcast, how I've built multiple brands, including a clothing brand, you could definitely take advantage of that as well. We also have our private mastermind group, the Warriors Obituary Society. And that is awesome. I talked about that earlier in the show. I won't chat your ear off about it now, but if you're interested in that, you can head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. With that, guys, I want to thank you so much again for listening. We'll be back at you later on this week with some more awesome content, and I am out.